Well, good afternoon and welcome. My name is Maren McGowan, and I'm Associate Director of Grassroots and Internal Advocacy here at the American Diabetes Association. And I'd like to welcome you and wish you all a Happy New Year. Welcome you to our Government Affairs and Advocacy update for 2015. We've got some great presenters on hand, and I'm going to allow them to be introduced or introduce themselves as we go along. In the interest of time, we have a lot of content to get through. But before we get started, I'd just like to thank those of you who have submitted questions and also encourage each of you to send questions from your own screen to ours through the webinar chat box. We'll address as many questions as we can, either during the presentation or at the end during our Q&A session. And if we end up having more questions than we can cover in our 75 minutes, we'll address those in follow-up posting to the Advocacy Leadership Listserv and emails to anyone who registered for this webinar. With your final reminder email today, you got a copy of today's slides, six to a page, and tomorrow you will be getting a shorter version of those slides that you can adapt for your own local presentation. I know a lot of you on this call are advocacy chairs, and one of the goals for advocacy chairs is to do an annual update at the first meeting, CLB meeting of the year, and then, of course, provide shorter updates throughout the year at any CLB meeting. So you'll get a packet of information that can help you with those presentations, including a shorter version of the PowerPoint slides that will include talking points for you and also handouts that you can use for your presentations for your audience. I'm just going to take 1 second and mute all lines. I just realized I forgot to do that, and I'm hearing some ambient noise. If the presenters will just press star 7 so they can unmute their lines when it's their turn to speak.
The conference has been muted.
So you can see from the names on this slide that we've got a great group of really experienced volunteers facilitating the webinar today. And I certainly want to start out thanking them, but as I said, in the interest of time, we'll let the introductions happen as we move through the webinar. And first up, we'd like to, just before I do that, I wanted to acknowledge an exciting thing this year. Before we hear from Gina, I'm sure many of you have already seen this, that 2015 is the 75th anniversary of our American Diabetes Association, and we're going to be celebrating that in many different ways throughout the association. I know Joe Franco, who's our Managing Director of Grassroots and Internal Advocacy, is a part of the work group that's putting together plans for celebrations throughout the year, so we'll be hearing more from him. But before we're asking you to do things on behalf of the anniversary celebration, I would like to encourage each of you to join in the game with us and help us make it fun. So some of you I know have been doing this a very long time, and you may have some photos of years ago when you attended either Call to Congress or even far enough back when it was called the Public Policy Leadership Forum, or if you attended participated in a state diabetes at the Capitol Day, any of those old photos. We'd love to get them, and it's easier than ever before to scan them, even if you don't have the negative. So please feel free to send them to me. You all have my email, Maren McGowan. And we just love to use those as an opportunity to celebrate the years and all the accomplishments that we've had throughout the years. So with that, I want to turn it over to Gina Gablach.
Thanks, Maren. And Happy New Year, everyone. I'm so glad that you're all able to be on the call. If you're having any problems with audio or things like that, there is a note that was just put on in the chat box, so please take a look over there so that you can see how you can dial in if you're having any problems with hearing here in the webinar. And, again, it's my pleasure to be a part of our annual update as we launch this year, our 2015 advocacy efforts together. And what we want to do with the purpose of this webinar, it's actually twofold. We want to make sure that everyone on the call, all of us as advocacy leaders, that we're all up to speed with regards to what our priorities are. And then we also want to make sure that we're providing enough information to be able to help those of you who are local advocacy chairs of your community leadership board to either start beginning or to continue with your planning and preparing for your advocacy presentation at your first community leadership board meeting this year. So as you can see on the screen, based on the webinar agenda, if you've been on these calls before, you might have noticed that we are kind of switching things up a little bit this year. As Maren mentioned, what we're going to do is we are going to do a little bit of a reversal of our presentation order. And we've been talking about that, and we think that this might actually be more beneficial in helping you prepare for your meeting. So what we're going to start out with is we're going to focus on the big picture. And what the big picture is going to include would be the how and what to cover when you're talking about advocacy to not only your Cleveland Leadership Board members, but also to anybody that you're talking to regarding ADA's advocacy efforts. And the whole purpose of starting out with focusing on the big picture is to allow you to begin to start thinking about or to continue to build a framework for your presentation. And then after that, what we're going to do is we're going to then discuss the details. And by discussing the details, that'll help provide different ideas that you can use to fill in that framework so that you know what might be good to present. You can personalize it based on what's going on in your communities, but then also be able to tie it back to what's going on with our overall priorities and our agenda. And what we're going to do with that is we're going to include our 2014 advocacy victories and then also what our 2015 advocacy priorities are. So before we move forward, one of the things that I really want to make sure is that my goal as the advocacy chair, but just also as an advocate and remembering where I started from, is I want to make sure that everybody feels very comfortable with what they're doing and that they feel connected and that you feel empowered to be able to talk about advocacy. The other thing, too, is the beauty of doing all of this together is by working together, we really learn a lot of new things and new ideas from each other, and we help each other continue to move forward and move up to the next level of advocacy. So I challenge everybody at the beginning of every year to think about where you're at now and what can you do to move your efforts forward. And as you're doing that and you're presenting to your Cleveland or your community leadership boards, as well as other people that you're trying to get involved, remember what it was like when you first started, because that's where they're at. So as you think about that as you're going through, it'll also help them be able to get started and then be able to move forward. So with that, we'll go ahead and we'll jump right in. Maren, am I going to advance my slides? Oh, there we go. I got it. All right. So what you want to do is whenever you're doing an advocacy presentation, whether it's to your community leadership board or to other groups or individuals, we always want to make sure that we're beginning the presentation by making sure that our audience understands our big picture. What's the big picture of our advocacy work? But also, how does it fit in with our mission? How does it fit in with our strategic plan? And the other really big important piece is that there's an opportunity for everybody to get involved and to be involved, and how important it is for people to get and be involved. So what we want to do is we want to start off by explaining that advocacy at the American Diabetes Association has these four main focus areas that we see on the screen. And the purpose of the focus areas are these areas help guide our efforts and they help guide our involvement. So we're looking for increased federal and state funding for diabetes prevention, treatment, and research, preventing diabetes, improving the availability of accessible, adequate, and affordable health care, and also eliminating discrimination against people with diabetes. And as you'll see as we go through, this is going to help people get a better understanding of who we are and what we do and why we do what we do. So what we want to do also is we always want to make sure that we're including and mentioning a victory. We want to invite people to join us, to join a winning team. We've had some incredible accomplishments, and we are set out to accomplish other great things as we move forward. People really like to be a part, and they want to be a part of a winning team, but people also need to be invited to do that. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're sharing our successes. And you're going to find, and you'll see on the screen here, around January 14th, you're going to receive an email that's going to have our 2014 advocacy accomplishment document. That's a one-page document that's two-sided that lists so many fantastic things that we've been able to do through advocacy in the year 2014 with all of our efforts. Now, the biggest thing, too, is that, you know, I'm hoping everybody has already spoken to the chair of their community leadership board, for those of you that are advocacy chairs, to ask for them to provide you with some time during your first CLB meeting to be able to provide some advocacy updates and what the game plan is and our priorities are for 2015. You know, we always encourage people to ask for about 20 minutes, but as a lot of us will know, is sometimes you won't get 20 minutes. So if they give you 10 minutes, 5 minutes, what you're going to do is, as you're going through and you know what your time frame is, you'll be able to tweak what you're going to speak about based on the allotted time you're given. So you're not going to be able to cover everything that we've done. So I would really recommend highlighting 2 to 4 items, 3 to 5, 2 to 4, somewhere in that range, to be able to talk about what it is specifically that has happened, what are the successes, and if any of them have affected you locally, of course those are great ones to share. Always consider your audience. Get a feel for what's important to them. What do they know about? Is it something that you've mentioned before and now you can give them an update on? And if you're not sure what to talk about or what would be best to highlight, I would really encourage you to work with your state advocacy director. He or she will be a great resource. They'll have great information to be able to share with you to help get you started. And then one of the biggest things, too, and as you can see it's in bold at the bottom, is make sure you give whoever you're talking to, whether it's a community leadership board member or whether it's another group that you're talking to, please be sure to give them something specific to do. Don't assume that they know what it is that you need them to do. Make specific asks and then make it as easy as possible for them to be able to accomplish. So what we want to do, too, is we want to make sure that every time we do a presentation that we always end with a really strong appeal, and that appeal is for each audience member to actually get involved. And what we find is when you ask somebody to do something, they have a much greater chance of doing that simply because you are the one that asked them, especially if it's somebody you know. So the easiest things to get to do, the thing that we want everyone to do, is to sign up to be a diabetes advocate. So encourage all of your community leadership board members, especially, and then when you're at any other meetings as well, to go to thediabetes.org/takeaction to sign up to be a diabetes advocate. Then the other thing, too, is we want to make sure that and let them know that when they sign up to do this, that they are going to receive information on our federal and state legislation, and then that there'll be the messages for the elected officials as well as the email alerts. The other thing, too, though, is remind them that once they sign up that we need them to respond to the action alerts and that we need them to forward the action alerts to their friends, their family members, their coworkers, anybody that they know, and to encourage them or make an ask for that person then to go ahead and respond to the action alert as well. And then another big thing, too, that sometimes I think we overlook is repost those action alerts on your social media sites. If it's Facebook, you know, post it, but don't just post it. Ask your Facebook friends to take action. So, again, it's making that ask. Take action, follow the link below. It's very simple. It'll walk them through what to do. The biggest thing, though, is, like we said, making sure that people know what the ask is, know what we want them to do, and to make it as easy for them to do as possible. So whether you're I'll keep my hand off of the advance the slide button. The other thing, too, is we want to make sure that when we're talking to our community leadership board members and doing other presentations, make sure you know your audience, but also let your audience know that they can really play a key role in building capacity and support for ADA's advocacy efforts. Recruiting hometown advocates is incredibly important. You're the one in your hometown who knows people. Who do you know and who do they know? Provide opportunities for people to sign up and take action at every single ADA event that's going on in your local market. The other thing, too, is identify community members with relationships, those with elected officials, you know, whether it's the governor, a member of Congress, somebody in the White House administration. Invite them and help us grow our grasstops connections. It could be as simple as if you know somebody knows somebody in an elected position and they don't know what to say to that person, maybe they can help you get that meeting secured and invite them to join you at that meeting. So that way you the two of you, or increase the size of your group, can go ahead and talk to that that elected officials. And then the other big thing, too, is recruit healthcare professionals and attorneys for our legal advocacy networks. You can see one of the cards at the bottom of the screen for the it's a recruitment card for the attorneys for the legal advocacy network. There's also a card for healthcare professionals. So in addition to the annual update, we want to make sure that for our community leadership boards, that we're also making sure that we're keeping in touch with the members throughout the year and in between meetings. Try to provide your CLB members and other people that you've developed relationships with, provide them with updates as often as you can. And then the other thing, too, as things come up, send out requests and opportunities for people to get involved and to help support our advocacy activities. It's all about building relationships. So one of the good things, too, besides just with the CLB members, try to work with your CLB chairs as well as your local staff to help them get a better feel for what advocacy is if they feel like they're lacking some information on that, but also help them see how advocacy fits into every single thing that we're doing, whether it's programs, whether it's advocacy, whether it's trying to do fundraising. And that is so incredibly important. One of the other pieces, too, is meeting with elected officials. So a good way to engage community leadership board members is to ask them to join you in meetings with your local members of Congress. Sometimes that can be very intimidating for people. I know it was for me when I got started. Get the meeting set up, see who can join you, and sometimes even just by introducing them to whoever that member of Congress is or a state legislator, then ask them if there is, you know, to tell them what it's like to live with diabetes or to have a child with diabetes. And it gives them an opportunity to get involved and share their story. The other thing, too, is many people on this call have participated in our August in-district meetings, and thank you so much for doing that. We really saw an increase in our numbers. One of our goals for 2015 is to increase the number of in-district meetings that we're having with our members of Congress, but now we're looking to do this not only in August, but throughout the year, especially when there's other pivotal times in the legislative process. So if you can keep those conversations going with your member of Congress as frequently as possible and meeting with them as frequently as possible, that really, really helps with building the relationships, and it really helps get our point across in terms of why it's so important to be involved. Remember, when you're talking to others, whether it's your community leadership board, well, especially your community leadership board members and others, remind them why it's so important for them to be involved with public policy, why it's so important for them to talk about what their diabetes story is, whether it's their personal story or whether it's their child's story or what they see as a healthcare professional or whatever the case may be. Remember that our elected officials, whether they're in Congress or whether they're at the state, they oftentimes don't see diabetes as serious, and oftentimes they don't truly understand what diabetes is or is not. So they really need us, and they really want us to come in, and they want us to talk about what diabetes looks like personally or professionally if you're a healthcare provider or a researcher, and why the things that we're advocating for are so incredibly important. All right. So now that we took a really quick, and I do apologize and know that was really fast, if you didn't see them on the email that Maren sent out before the call, all of these slides are provided in a handout form as well. So now that we have a good look at what the big picture is of the key elements to share in your advocacy presentations, we're going to go back through each of these elements to fill in some of the details. So I'm excited to celebrate with you over the phone a few of the highlights of our accomplishments from 2014. We've achieved a lot of great things in 2014, and what's really important to remember is we did these together. This is the result of all of us coming together and working together and advancing all of our efforts. And what I'm really excited about is, you know, 2015, there's so many great opportunities ahead of us besides the fact that it's the 75th anniversary of the ADA. This is a great year. There's going to be a lot for us to do, and I'm very excited about it. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to advance to the next slide. Or Maren, can you advance me to the next slide? Thank you. All right. So what I'm going to do quickly is I'm going to start out by highlighting a few items that are related to our federal and our state legislative efforts. In a little bit, you're going to hear from Maudie Nelson, and she's going to talk about Diabetes Disparity Action Councils and some of the successes and highlights that they've had. And then Kathy Butler is also going to highlight some of the efforts in fighting discrimination through the legal advocacy efforts. everything the three of us are going to cover, these are all going to be included in that 2014 accomplishments document that Maren is going to be sending out to everybody around January 14th. So if we get started by looking at some of the federal exciting things that have happened federally, you can see them on the screen, so I'm not going to read each of them word for word. But as you see for that first one, advocating for increased federal funding is an incredible part of what we advocate for. And you can see that we did get an increase in not only in fiscal year 14, but also an additional $5.4 million in fiscal year 15. What's very exciting about this from my perspective is in 2014, even though it was a challenging year, despite all the congressional gridlock and everything that was going on, we made progress and we were able to see additional funding being put towards diabetes research and prevention programs. The second bullet point, USPSTF stands for United States Preventative Services Task Force. That's why I'm allowed to be the chair, is because I can remember what USPSTF stands for, and I can say it fast. Anyway, so what happened here in 2014 was what the recommends a B rating for. Before, it didn't have a B rating. It was a much lower prevalence, and the only way people could receive screening for type 2 diabetes was if they had high blood pressure. So we were missing a ton of people, an opportunity to get people screened and diabetes diagnosed, or the risk for diabetes diagnosed early. So this B rating, as you can see here, means that under the Affordable Care Act, that the service is going to be covered free of charge. And then we also saw increased federal funding for research and prevention programs for 2015. If we look at what happened state in regards to state issues, we had Thank you. We all know Safe at School is a great way to highlight how we've made great successes. The 2012 through 2015 strategic plan actually mentions or talks about the fact that we will add an additional 12 states that meet the three tenets of our Safe at School campaign. In 2014, Alabama, Kentucky, Ohio, and Tennessee were four of those states that passed legislation. We're very excited to say that this brings us up to 11 states, and we have seven additional states that are that we've made significant progress in 2014. So we're well on target to exceed our goal of the 12 states by the end of 2015. So I'm incredibly excited about that. And then on other fronts, you'll see Diabetes Action Plan legislation was approved. And overall, we had 44 legislative or regulatory victories at the state level in 2014. So a lot of really good, exciting things going on. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Maudine. Maudine, were you able to get on?
Maudine, press *7, and that will unmute your line.
And Maudine is going to cover the recent accomplishments and the 2015 goals of the Diabetes Disparity Action Council.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Hi, Maudine.
And in our part of the country, we're getting lots of very cold weather, but fortunately a bit sunny, too. My name is Maudine Nelson. I'm the chair of the African American Diabetes Action Council. I'm also a registered dietitian and a certified diabetes educator. And I'm here this afternoon to give you the highlights, and I'm going to try to condense them as much as we can to stay on time, or at least to stay on time, of the 2014 accomplishments of the newly renamed Diabetes Disparities Action Council. It used to be Diabetes Epidemic Action Council. And the council now consists not of three, we used to be called Tri-Council, but four. It's the African American Diabetes Action Council, the Asian Pacific American Diabetes Action Council, the Latino Diabetes Action Council, and now the new American Indian Alaskan Native Diabetes Action Council. And in addition, I'll try to highlight new things for 2015. Because you can hear that those words are a mouthful, we often use acronyms, which sound also like another language. So for a number of years, the Government Affairs and Advocacy worked with our high-risk programs in the ADA and the Health Disparities Department to support the work of Awakening the Spirit program, which focused heavily on advocating for continued funding for the Special Diabetes Program. Now, that's a program that provides funding for diabetes treatment and prevention in the 404 Indian Health Services, Tribal, and Urban Health Indian Health Initiative programs across the U.S. However, our volunteers from the new American Indian Alaska Native communities recognized that there were many other issues that have an impact on their communities and that they could benefit from broader advocacy efforts, not just covering refunding of the Indian Health Services program. And so in 2014, the American Indian Council, chaired by Chandra McCage, who in your slide is the woman standing to the right of the poster on the easel, began laying the foundation for our work within those communities. She highlighted the differences and the challenges of urban versus the reservation dwelling of the Native Americans. And in 2015, they will continue to refine the direction of the council and will be seeking new members in case anyone would like to propose anybody. We encourage you to contact your state advocacy directors if you know of any other good, any good potential candidates. And remember, we're all trying to help contribute to the work that's ahead of us. If you know any strategic partners, they would also be good recommendations for us now, too. So one major theme throughout 2014 was increased advocate engagement at the national and the local level. Remember, the Affordable Care Act has been in place with, you know, lots of support in my neck of the woods. Access to health care remained a priority for the Diabetes Disparities Action Council as the Affordable Health Care Act was fully implemented in 2014. The councils provided real-time feedback on issues that have an impact on high-risk communities, which was shared during a series of stakeholder meetings with the White House and other members of the current administration. In addition, we saw, exciting developments during the year as members of our Action Council became more engaged locally. For example, Guadalupe Pacheco, a member of the Latino Diabetes Action Council, worked with his local advocacy, state advocacy director, to push legislation to create a health disparities commission. The legislation established a commission on health disparities and was passed by the D.C. Council unanimously. That's a pretty good turnout, I'd say. The commission is composed of 9 representatives from relevant areas, including public health, patient advocacy, early learning and education, economic development, and minority communities to work, and the group of them are to work with city agencies and community groups to develop and submit an annual action plan aimed at reducing chronic diseases, including diabetes. But what the idea is that it's among minority populations. So this bill will serve as a model for the new 2015 state health disparities priority and will be an opportunity for local advocates to engage with stakeholders in support of our efforts in the high-risk community. In 2014, the councils engaged in the media in new and very good, interesting ways, as well as published an article in Clinical Diabetes outlining how primary care physicians can engage in advocacy. The article also pointed out the sort of the social determinants of health, including how it has an impact on obesity and the environment and the workplace and so on. National Advocacy Committee members and Latino Diabetes Action Council member Manny Hernandez hosted a live web chat through his foundation, Diabetes Hands, and he did this on ADA's response to a key nutrition regulation and used that as a way to engage the blogger community and others on this process and encourage them to engage the administration as well. In 2015, we will host other live chats. So as a result of these efforts, in 2015, government affairs and advocacy will explore more ways to engage advocates in the regulatory process, which they had not considered in the past, as well as ways to further engage the media. Last year, and you now be looking at a picture of one of the African-American Diabetes Action Council members, Ronice Weaver. Last year, we held our second Advocates in Action webinar to strengthen our efforts in high-risk communities, and we also are sharing strategies to engage other stakeholders in areas hardest hit. Ronice Weaver, who's in the JPEGs that you see there, was one of the speakers at the webinar, and she's been nationally recognized. We're so proud of her for her mobile fresh produce bus that she launched last year in conjunction with a local health provider in Florida, where you can see you're putting policy into practice. There is you're offering that the produce, the mountain is going to the community. The produce is being delivered in a truck, pardon me, a bus, and I understand that it's gotten very good response. We've long advocated for policy changes that lead to healthier environments, which include having an impact on food deserts. Her collaborative effort is now having that impact that we all wanted in the communities in Florida with some of the highest rates of diabetes and obesity. This year, we're also going to have our third Advocates in Action webinar to share additional advocacy engagement strategies. And almost toward the end, partners who are key to successful advocacy for high-risk communities. So we never want to have a chat without remembering to emphasize the importance of partners and forming partnerships. The Diabetes Disparities Action Council continued to help build our network of leading organizations, and this slide represents some of the strategic partners who we engaged in 2014. One highlight is the impact of our collaborative efforts with the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Diabetes Coalition. Several members of that group are members of this incredible group, has accomplished many significant efforts. In our 2015 Standards of Care, contains a new position statement on lowering the body mass index, or as we all know, BMI, cut point at which it recommends screening of Asian Americans for type 2 diabetes. And this is aligning it with guidelines with evidence that many Asian Americans develop the disease at lower BMI levels than the population at large. The position statement highlights for the first time the physiologic differences seen between Asian Americans and other populations affected by diabetes. Thus, raising awareness of this key difference in the development of this statement was the result of the hard work of this coalition. The scientific statement will be used to support further advocacy initiatives. So we have had an Austin Council meeting. I don't have any highlights of that, but there have been other local meetings that the LDAC, or the Latino Diabetes Action Council, was to reengage the Latino media on diabetes in the Latino community, and also the importance of advocacy in galvanizing communities to address their issues. In 2014, we gained tremendous traction in this area, and two highlights include the following. Diversifying membership, and Manny Hernandez joined LDAC this year. He brought increased awareness of how to harness social media to have an impact on Latino communities with the Diabetes Hands Foundation. And another example of the partnerships and the important advocacy efforts was engaging Telemundo. In collaboration with marketing and communications at the association, a relatively new director of multicultural and strategic marketing, Mariana Eberle Blaylock, in collaboration with her, we've been fostering a relationship with Telemundo, and we were invited to be a part of a town hall broadcast in Spanish on the Affordable Care Act. I personally see that as a huge big deal. Millie Garcia represented the American Diabetes Association on this panel and shared our newly updated health insurance resources that we had translated into Spanish. And this is a huge step in helping further the position of ADA as a resource for the Latino community. We advocated for other needs in the Latino community at the White House Office of External Affairs based on input from LDAC this year. We've been able to advise the White House and work with other partner organizations to share the challenges in the areas of opportunities for the administration to help increase health insurance coverage for the Latino community. It sounds as though it's a bit redundant. Well, we did it for all minority groups, but we keep wanting to remember that being hard hit by diabetes, having the high rate of the impact being greatest in some communities more than others, that there's still so many nuances within those, and we found that our members were able to help articulate those nuances and come up with additional assistance, and this advocacy effort is so important. So the last point before my presentation is over, and in case I don't get it in before I finish my last sentence, remember everybody should become an advocate for diabetes. It's very simple. Get it done and then invite all your friends and family. So Guadalupe, we mentioned earlier, worked with his state and local advocacy director to push legislation to create the Health Disparities Commission. And in 2015, continue to strengthen partnerships. We, of course, never want to forget fundraising. No money, no mission. Although I don't want anyone to think that anyone who I work with as an advocate to think that it's all about money, but we have to be realistic and know that the communities who are hit are part of our fundraising. They are potential people who can help us with fundraising in some fashion. But, of course, this is an advocacy message, so let me stay with everyone trying to become an advocate, everyone trying to remember the wonderful things that are coming in the next year, and look forward to being on a call with each of you when we raise awareness of the urgency of addressing diabetes epidemic in high-risk communities and to further engage our legislators. So thank you for your attention. I hope I haven't spoken too fast. I hope it's been interesting, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you so much, Maudine. We're going to hold some questions for the end. So if you have any questions, please feel free to type those into the chat box. I do see that there are a couple on there that were geared toward me, and I will get to those as soon as I can. What we're going to do at this point is I just want to spend a real brief minute. I'm not going to read the slide to you. I'm going to let you read this on your own. But I think it's really important for everybody to have an understanding on how our federal and state legislative and regulatory priorities are determined. This information you will probably not have enough time to share at your CLB meetings, but in case anybody asks you, we wanted to make sure that you had the information to be able to address that question if it were to come up. Remember, all of these slides were available to you, so you'll have all of these that you're seeing in print. But if you look at how this is all set up here, the bottom line is that ADA is asked to work on a really great number of issues throughout the year, and we have to count on volunteers and staff around the country to provide us with input to develop a set of our annual priorities. We have to figure out what we're going to focus on. We can't do every single thing. So what we have to do is for our day-to-day work in influencing public policy, we have to translate those four very large broad goals that were on the first slide about increasing federal funding, preventing diabetes, improving access to affordable and adequate care, health care, and then also eliminating discrimination. We have to make sure that those four very broad goals are put into specific actions and relate them to the legislative efforts and the strategies. And how these are determined is last fall you might have remembered receiving a call for input from volunteers and staff regarding what did we as advocacy leaders, what did we think was important. We actually received over 3,000 responses to that. And from those, that's how we go about to determine what our priorities are. And then you can see how the whole process goes. But what I think is important to know, and I'm going to advance it to the next slide here, is that there's so much work to be done to stop diabetes that we have to figure out how do we best utilize our resources? How do we best do things that are in key with making strategic decisions that align with our mission, that align with the strategic plan and our strategic imperatives, not impairments, that would be bad. Plus, we also have to look at the political landscape and the ability of resources and see what's the reality of things happening in that upcoming year. And that's how these priorities are determined. So you had received as a link in the attachments for the webinar, there were two attachments that listed the federal and state legislative and regulatory priorities. One attachment is tiered and the other attachment is a non-tiered piece. And what we're going to do with that is we usually use the tiered piece, the one that'll break it down into tier one, tier two, more internally to see tier one, as you can see, is the highest priority activities that ADA is the key player in or leading the efforts in. And you see tier two is a little bit lower. ADA is consistently engaged, but we're not expending as much resources. But when we're sharing our priorities with people that are not internal, we usually will share that non-tiered document. It's easier to follow, and it lists all of our priorities so that everybody sees what's going on in a way that just bullet points everything. It's easier to read and follow. What's incredibly important, though, is we do make sure that we're looking about eliminating health disparities throughout anything that we're doing, as that is, as we know, like Maudine just mentioned, that those communities are so so hard hit by diabetes. So at this time, I'd like to turn the discussion of the priorities over to George Huntley, who's the chair of our Legislative and Regulatory Subcommittee. George?
Thanks, Gina. Okay, I will start first. This is a great setup. So I will start first with the federal priorities, and then I'll cover the state priorities in separate slides and separate batches. As Gina mentioned, you can see in red at the top of the page there, in all areas there's an ongoing commitment to ending health disparities. We put that in there. There's a couple of spots where we actually will specifically address health disparities as a separate piece of legislation, but very often the ability to impact health disparities lies within a broader bill. So we put that there as a broader reminder. So moving into the federal funding for diabetes research and programs, we're going to work to increase funding for the National Institutes of Health, NIDDK, and the CDC's Division of Diabetes Translation. We're going to work to reauthorize the special diabetes programs for type 1 research and programs in Native American and Alaskan Native communities. That's something you see a lot. This is kind of on there a lot. We can't take it for granted. We've had great success, but we still got to run up the mountain every time. Funding for the National Diabetes Prevention Program, which supports community-based programs to prevent type 2 diabetes, and to increase funding dedicated to diabetes research at the Department of Defense and the Veterans Health Administration. And moving to the next slide, still in the Tier 1 priorities under health insurance, we ensure that both public and private insurance options, including those under the Affordable Care Act, as well as Medicare and Medicaid, provide access to the services, tools, and education needed to meet the needs of people with diabetes and prediabetes. We'll also advocate for improved delivery of care through system reforms that lead to high-quality, effective, efficient, and collaborative care for people with diabetes. On the prevention side, the federal level, our focus is on prevention and the primary prevention of type 1 and type 2 diabetes. So type 1 is now on the federal docket, which is exciting. Discrimination side, and I'm moving quickly to just in keeping in respect for people's time. On the discrimination side, our final area of focus as a tier 1 top priority is in fighting discrimination. We continue to oppose laws or policies that result in unfair treatment of people with diabetes. As we have in previous years, we'll continue to focus at the federal level on preventing or stopping employment discrimination, but also this year, Safe at School is shown as a federal priority. We're looking to emulate a model that was used in the allergy area that would provide a financial incentive for states to improve their laws, and that's something that we've seen done. We'd like to see if we could copy it. Moving to the Tier 2 priorities at the federal level, under health disparities, as I mentioned, support proposals specifically focused on reducing the disparate impact of diabetes on minority communities. In diabetes medications and devices, provide scientific expertise on the need for improved means to treat and monitor diabetes with focus on ensuring medically sound criteria for evaluation and establishing needed regulatory pathways, just really trying to move that needle forward overall for people with diabetes. Federal coordination on diabetes, support effort to coordinate the quality of care for diabetes across all federal agencies engaged in the care and management of diabetes. That's similar to the state diabetes action plans and coordination, but now this is at the federal level. So now influencing the state public policy, it's important to recognize as we look at this that the priority rankings are general in nature and the priorities for each state are derived from the document approved from the board. Legislation that's going to be worked on in any given state needs to be determined based on your local needs, the local opportunities, the local threats, et cetera. So this is an overarching view of the state work, but what's happening in your neck of the woods is going to be driven by the opportunities there. And all of those priorities should be set through discussions among the advocacy chair, the local staff, and the local state advocacy director. And speaking of the local state advocacy directors, the next slide will show us who they are. Thanks, Maureen. And so this lists the six state advocacy directors, each of whom covers a geographic area of the country that is quite substantial. So the takeaway message here is we've got a lot of territory for these folks to cover. So I think it would be good if you could share this slide with your community leadership board so that they have an awareness of the areas with which your state advocacy director covers. And, it adds a nice little collaboration opportunity if there's a neighboring state that person also covers, opening doors. Moving to the Tier 1 priorities for the state at the state level, in health insurance coverage, together with everybody and you on this call and everybody back home and our coalition partners, we're going to engage in campaigns to secure increased eligibility or coverage for Medicaid in states throughout the country. We're trying to expand the Medicaid use. In discrimination issues, we're going to ensure that the implementation is done correctly in all the states. This is back to implementation of the acts, implementation of the state that school legislation, we're going to ensure that they are implemented correctly in the states where we've passed legislation, like Alabama, Ohio, especially the recently passed ones. And we're going to continue to work with states that are pending, like Idaho, Montana, Nevada, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, South Dakota. So we've got a lot of states that are in process, if you will. And under Safe at School, we're going to take on some new states, which is a list that's being finalized now and will be shared very shortly. And then lastly, under Safe at School, we're going to defend the laws and regulations that are already on the books, because there are many times when the law's there, but the people don't necessarily follow it. So it's important that we look at all of those fronts as we move forward. Moving to Tier 2 priorities for the state, in prevention, we'll work with you to improve prevention policy in our schools, including improving physical education requirements and school nutrition programs. And then at the community level, we're working to ensure communities have access to recreational space and facilities, eliminating food deserts, and ensuring there are safe walking routes to school. On the research and surveillance front, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, funds diabetes control programs in every state as well as the District of Columbia. And these are the public health programs. They monitor diabetes prevalence, implement and evaluate diabetes interventions. They work to increase access to quality diabetes care and treatment, and they promote public awareness about diabetes. So we are encouraging our state legislators to protect or with hopefully increase funding for these programs, as well as other diabetes-related public health programs. And with respect to state coordination on diabetes, we continue to build on the number of states requiring diabetes action plans. These plans assess the burden of diabetes in states and the resources states are allocating to diabetes, and often expose a significant health problem with very few resources actually being allocated to address it. So the legislation also requires states to develop and report a coordinated plan to address the state's burden of diabetes. Hopefully that helps us garner more budget money for the other issues that we've been talking about. And lastly, on the state Tier 2 priorities, in 2015, we'll work with all of you and the coalition partners to seek policy to change and reduce the disparate impact of diabetes in minority communities, through policy aimed at reducing barriers, development of commissions to assess and implement policy recommendations, and other legislative and policy initiatives, and specifically the one that Maudine mentioned earlier in the presentation today. And finally, we're going to advocate for expansion of funding for diabetes research at the state levels. Believe it or not, some states actually have money to support diabetes research, and we want every dollar we can get. And we want to oppose any efforts to limit research opportunities. So those are two important things that we do look at the state level. I apologize for speaking quickly. Hopefully that made some sense, and happy to take any questions. But now I'd love to introduce Kathy Butler, who is the chair of our Legal Advocacy Subcommittee, to cover some more very important pieces.
Thank you, George, and Happy New Year to everyone. We do need to move quickly, I know, so I'm going to try to race through this. But before I do, I just wanted to say to everybody on the call that we really need to pat ourselves on the back for the work that this organization does in advocacy. It is really unique in terms of other groups that represent people who have disabilities, and it's really something that we should be proud of and work hard on. Obviously, everyone knows the reason we have legal advocacy is because there is discrimination. As I like to say, ignorance is poisonous, and there's a lot of it out there. Our point, obviously, is that there should be an individualized assessment for everyone with diabetes. There shouldn't be stereotypes. There shouldn't be assumptions. There shouldn't be blanket bans, and we're working hard on that issue. Also, the issue of reasonable accommodation. It really blows my mind, but it's true that still in this day and age, there are companies that will not let people have their supplies with them while they're working. They want them to pack them away and put them somewhere else. So we're really pushing for common sense that make a difference for people with diabetes, because as much as all of us hope for a cure tomorrow, we know that we've got to make the road as smooth as possible for everyone with diabetes until that happens. All right, so moving to the next slide, if we could, or maybe not. Oh, there you go. What we say is that legal advocacy is fighting for fairness, and we're fighting in schools and daycares. We're fighting in the employment workplace, prisons and jails, and in public places, airports, so that people don't get stopped by TSA. And what do? We provide information to people. We provide training, and we provide resources. Obviously, one of the big things for the Diabetes Association is the way that we bring groups of professionals together and become bigger than the sum of our parts, really, by doing so. Lawyers, doctors, other healthcare professionals, it's just beautiful to see. And obviously, we've got a lot of resources. If you go to diabetes.org, you'll see it. We've got a lot of training materials. We've got Safe at School training modules, so that anybody in their area that wants to reach out to the schools and help them understand what they need to do to make it safe, we've got all these great resources. All right, moving to the next slide. Well, I guess I've kind of covered this, but the first thing, by going to diabetes.org/discrimination, you can get a bunch of resources that will help people train themselves about how to be better advocates. You can also call the National Call Center at 1-800-DIABETES. Those are the two ways that you can reach out to people. But it's important to know what kind of stuff that we have. We've got specialized resources regarding daycare, schools, employment, police custody, public accommodations, prison, and commercial driver's licenses. So it's not a situation where you have to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of resources that are out there, and you can get them easily. Obviously, you can also tell people to call this 1-800 number if they're dealing with discrimination in any of these areas. And you know, we get up to 250 calls a month from people who are trying to figure out what they can do to protect their rights, and that's such an important thing. All right, let me move quickly to the highlights. The first one, you know, I think really shows that the ADA is on the cutting edge. We published the first position statement on the rights of young children with diabetes in child care programs. That's a huge step, and I think that's something to be really proud of. In October, throughout the year, we published an electronic newsletter called the Diabetes Docket, which we have got 2,300 subscribers on so far. that gives information about legal advocacy, that gives highlights about what good's going on. One of the great things we're also trying to do is, you know, get the word out to police forces. There can be a lot of problems with people mistaking a person who has got problems with their diabetes for somebody who's drunk. And so we're trying to train people to know the difference. You don't want to start whooping up on somebody that's really got a different kind of problem. And one of the great things through the efforts of Alan Yatvin is to get training that was done at the New York Police Academy. Because what, you know, we figure, you know, one way to do it is to go to the top, and you go to the biggest police force, the most well-recognized police force, you get them trained, and then you send the message out to the rest of the country. So that's a great thing that we're doing. Another thing that's really good that wasn't on that slide, but I just wanted to throw it out there because I think it's so good, is the efforts that Catherine Gordon and others made to put messages out on social media. For example, myth, nobody who has diabetes can work as a truck driver. Reality, that's not right. Here's how you can do it. So just really quickly reaching out with a method is a good way to get in touch with tons of people and make a make the point that you don't want to stereotype. All right, moving to 2015. The 2015 legal advocacy priorities are, first of all, of course, our efforts at Safe at School, making sure that children with diabetes have the same educational opportunities. They're not, you know, corralled into one school a long way from home. They are treated fairly. They're allowed to learn with their siblings, with their friends. This is a huge effort of this organization. Ensuring that people with diabetes can successfully manage their diabetes at work. I mentioned that earlier. Not be faulted because they need to get out to check their blood sugar. What are you doing? They need to have the same education, I mean, same employment opportunities as other people in the workplace, too. The fact that they have diabetes shouldn't have any impact on whether they get promoted, whether they do a safety-sensitive job. It's important. And obviously, in public accommodations, that's another important area. We want to continue to improve the treatment of people with diabetes by police, by correctional authorities, driver's license regulations, and ensuring that people with diabetes can bring their supplies into all these places without problems. And so, finally, in order to promote legal advocacy, we need to promote our successes and our challenges to increase public awareness because we're doing a lot. And these efforts are very helpful to so many people. I've had so many people that I've worked with who were able, because of removing some blocks of ignorance, to fulfill their dreams. And so what do we want from you? One thing that we want from you is to increase the ranks of the people who are working in advocacy, train school advocates, attorneys, healthcare professionals. If you know any of these people, let's get them, you know, get them to diabetes.org and they can sign up and they don't have to take on a huge task. They can just learn about the various things that are available, and then they can do whatever works in their comfort zone. And also, by promoting our successes and the challenges, we also increase the financial resources of the organization because people are going to want to give if they see all the stuff we do, which is a lot. So anyway, I had to kind of speed my game up here because we're getting near the end of the time, and we want to leave a little time for questions. But so I will pass it over now to Kim, who's the co-chair of the Volunteer Engagement Work Group, who will talk about advocates in action.
Thank you so much, Kathy. as a mom with a person who has diabetes and as an ADA volunteer, I'm so encouraged by the fresh beginnings we all have in this new year to give us hope and passion to share our advocacy efforts. So among the handouts that you received with your remaining or your reminder email today is this Action in Advocates calendar. It's the new 2015 one. It's a key resource for hometown advocacy implementation. Compared to the other documents in this webinar, this really is more of an insider's tool. The hometown advocacy chair or your committee and subcommittees will take the lead in planning these local activities. You'll work with and collaborate with your state advocacy directors, your executive director, as well as other event staff and volunteers. Your community leadership board will have meetings, and depending upon how often you meet, you can share this printed calendar at that time. If time allows, you may go into more detail, but certainly you'll want to highlight what you personally have planned in your local area, or at quarterly at times, maybe go over what would happen in the next few months until your next meeting. Certainly, I won't cover all those activities in detail now, but rather just share the information that we recommend you give to your CLBs. And that way, it will help them understand how they can then support your efforts in your hometown actions. But before I get into all of that, let's go into the background a little bit. This is the sixth year for the Advocates in Action initiative. This calendar is designed to mobilize diabetes advocates throughout the year, or in other words, make it easier to organize what you want to accomplish this year. This particular year, though, we've made some key changes to the structure of the calendar. It will heighten your focus on year-round goals. You'll see the list of those eight goals on the next slide, but before that, the broad goals are then tied to specific calls to action. They are locally focused, in other words. While some activities are tied to a particular month, others are not. These broad goals are chosen strategically to fit with our current association's wide strategic plan and make sure that we're all working together as advocates across the country, but as well with all the other divisions in our association to achieve our common goals. Each month, specific training and resources are provided to support your hometown implementation of those calls to action. The trainings, the resources certainly are freely available. Many of them are online. And those would be accessible by any volunteer and staff advocacy leader. Our hometown advocacy online resource is at www.diabetes.org/hometownadvocacy. That is your go-to resource for all the Advocates in Action resources. These web pages are being reorganized in the next month, and they will align better with the new structure of the 2015. This is really exciting because the calendar now is just in a two-dimensional form or a PDF document. We hope that it will be then turned into a multidimensional web space so that local volunteers and staff will be more able to easily access these tools and training as they need them. Again, this online library can be accessed at diabetes.org/hometownadvocacy. This will always remain the same general URL, even as we're reorganizing these subsections. Now, a special note for those of you who are brand new to advocacy chair roles, if you haven't seen this calendar before, certainly reach out to both your local market executive director or your state advocacy director and arrange for a call or meeting to discuss how your market will support these activities. Next slide, please. All right, we're there. As you read through these eight goals, as the co-chair of our volunteer engagement work group, I have to say how thrilling it has been to watch the markets across the country take on the Advocates in Action calendar of activities. Especially exciting in 2014, this past year in August, we had more advocates meet with their members of Congress during the August resource meetings than any time before. But we do know Congress needs to hear from us year-round, not just in March or August. And for someone like me who's been doing diabetes advocacy for now 20-plus years, it is so gratifying to see where we are now. That more and more markets, the inclusion of advocacy at every single event is a given. Oh, I still remember not so long ago when we were not at all assured of getting a spot at events. But working hand-in-hand with volunteers and staff from all the areas of the association, we certainly have come a long way. This list may look daunting to some, especially if you're just now getting started in advocacy. So that's where I'd just like to reassure that many of us, myself included, have been certainly in your shoes. Please look to your state advocacy director for guidance on how to set your own goals and plan for your own hometown advocacy engagements. Again, depending upon the time at your CLB meetings, reach out to the chairs of particular events such as your Tour to Cure, Step Out, Expos, etc., and work together on including advocacy. Next slide. Thank you. For the next two slides now, I'd like to cover what to share with those in specific, and in other words, to your CLB members, to help them know how they can support you and how they can support and include advocates in all of the efforts. Certainly by building your advocacy committee and subcommittees is very important. If one person just cannot do it all. So recruit and look for diverse talents. The exciting part would be to invite them to our advocacy webinar. We'll be having 6 or 7 of them during this year. So invite them to certainly be a part of it. That's where they can learn more about advocacy. And certainly, as the chair, you'll want to participate as well, but know that it is open to all other interested CLB members. Then meeting with elected officials. Well, certainly Gina has already mentioned this is a key ask for all CLB members, but certainly it's worth being repeated. Remember that we will, in June, have another webinar, and advocates and members can participate in that. Keep in mind our work in advocacy goes certainly hand-in-hand with the work of all volunteers and staff in all areas of our association. Many volunteers wear multiple hats during their volunteer careers. I like to say that all volunteers can be advocates. A Step Out Walk chair may join your advocacy committee down the line or vice versa. They also might be inspired by an in-district meeting to apply then and attend our call to Congress in 2017. The tips for this slide are more narrowly now focused on two specific CLB positions. First of all, the event chairs. It's always important to start early in the planning process. If the goal is to include advocacy at every event, then planning early is critical. Certainly, you know that inspiring, recruiting, engaging, and informing participants and donors is the must-have to have on your checklist. In February, we will be having another webinar, and that would be a place for people to include and learn more about ideas and resources for making the most of our advocacy at any of your events. For the communication chairs, supporting and getting the advocacy message out is critical. So that can be done through either traditional and social media. That may include certainly writing letters to the editor or op-eds using association talking points, as well as reposting and retweeting association advocacy messages and alerts. Certainly, encourage them to participate, because in May we'll have a webinar focusing on media outreach. And now, at that point, it is back to Gina, who will be talking about some legal issues to keep in mind with respect to advocacy on behalf of the association. Thank you all.
Thanks so much, Kim. I really appreciate it. And thank you also, George and Kathy, for the updates that you provided as well. I know we're getting really close to time. This is my last slide, but this is a really important piece. So if you can just, I hope you can hang on just a couple minutes here. And actually, it won't be a couple minutes. It's really important for us as a nonpartisan, nonprofit, 501c3 organization. We need to remember that we cannot endorse any candidates, that we cannot show preferential treatment to any political party. But even though we can't do those things, on the bottom you can see what we can do. It is really important that we do and we can do. We need to make sure that we give our issues preferential treatment, that we talk to our members of Congress and our elected officials at the state level about why diabetes is so serious, why it's important, and why it so needs their attention, and it's not getting their attention. And unfortunately, as a result, everything is worsening, including the physical and financial costs to the person, but also the healthcare systems, the communities, taxpayers, our nation as a whole. We really need to make sure that we're meeting with our public officials. We need to put a face on diabetes, and we need to make sure that they are hearing us and that they're not only hearing us, but they're understanding better what diabetes is. And that's the whole purpose of our advocacy issue advocating for our issues is to put a face on what diabetes is so that they remember the story when they're talking about diabetes or when they're trying to figure out what it is that they should put more funding to. And it is okay for us to invite public officials to our events as long as we follow specific rules. So it would be incredibly important that you worked with your local staff and that you also worked with your state advocacy director to make sure that we were doing things appropriately. So as this slide mentions what we can't do, like we said, it still mentions what we can and why it's so incredibly important to do so. So to wrap everything up, what I really want to encourage people to do is, as you start planning for your community leadership board meetings, as you're planning on meeting with other members out in the community, other organizations and things like that, always remember that big picture that we talked about first. And then as you learn more about what their interests are, that's when it's really good to look through our accomplishment list or look through our priority list to see what aligns with what they have or what their interests are. And if you're not sure, that's a perfectly fair question to ask. The other thing, too, and Kim mentioned it, if you have never been on diabetes.org/hometownadvocacy, if you've never been on that site, please visit it. There are so many great resources in there that are all everything that we've done in the past, all the webinars we've done in the past, any information you could possibly need, you can find on there. And the other thing, too, is I do want to thank everybody for being on the call, and thank you for everything that you do. I am always here if you need anything, whether it's to bounce an idea off or you're just frustrated or you're not sure what to do. Reach out to me. Reach out to the other volunteers. Reach out to the advocacy staff. We're all in together, and we're a great team, and I'm very excited to be part of the team, and I'm very thankful for all of you. And at this point, I'd like to turn it back over to Marin so we can start wrapping things up.
Thank you, Gina. And I just want to give a thanks to all of our presenters. We heard some great information today. Thanks to those of you who are on the line and have stayed with us. We had a rough beginning until we got started a little late. We've just got two questions, and I know some of you may need to leave, but I'd like to make sure that the two people who submitted questions in the chat box have a chance to get their questions answered. And in the interest of time, rather than opening up the phone line, I'll ask the questions on their behalf, and apologies for that. But first of all, from LJ Joinus, LJ, I'm sure I'm butchering your name. Sorry for that. But LJ is asking, and I believe this is a question for Joe Franco. So, Joe, be ready for this. Does field staff have access to be able to send local advocacy alerts to diabetes advocates in the local market? Joe?
Mark, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Sorry, we had to take ourselves off of mute. So, yes, our field staff will have access, and we work with our field staff as well as local advocates if there is a local issue that's particular maybe to a city or to a county. We're able to do that and ensure that we can kind of have those activities. And we are able to segment our advocates by local market. So if we only want to talk to people in San Francisco, for instance, or Chicago, we can do that instead of going statewide or nationwide. So we do have that ability, and we try to do that as much as we can when we have local issues.
Thank you, Joe. And the next one is a question from Debbie Woodward, and this is a question for LaShawn. So, LaShawn, I'm not sure if you're in the same room or calling from Pennsylvania. Press star 7 if you are. Will screening be paid for by all health plans under ACA or only exchange plans?
So I am on the line. Is Mara, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for that question. Most insurance plans are required to cover these types of tests, but there are still some that are not required to cover them, but that's a small, that number is shrinking. And there, you can also visit healthcare.gov to see the list of preventive services that are covered at no cost sharing to an individual.
Thank you, LaShawn. So I don't see any further questions that have come up in the meantime. Again, I just want to thank you all for participating in this webinar, and thank you in advance for all the great work that you're going to do this year. You can see we've accomplished a lot in 2014, and I think 2015 is going to be even more fun and exciting, and we've got 75 years to celebrate as well. So thank you very much. I will be sending out a shorter version of the slides that you can use, whether that's in presentations to your community leadership board or to other audiences, and that will include all of the talking points and the handouts, just kind of a nice little package for you to use in talking about advocacy out in your community. So I look forward to having you join us in future webinars, and have a happy new year and great evening. Thank you.